76 degrees, looking overcast out there, and possibly some rain in the vicinity as well. Jeremy Lawrence here with you. It is 4:08, time for hour number two of the Jeremy Lawrence program. If you are just joining us, of course, we've been talking about all sorts of great stuff, and you can get involved in the program at any time that you like that we are talking by giving us a call toll-free at 877-382-4280. Also, locally, it's 382-4280 and 80373. You could text us, be a part of the program that way. One of the things that we are talking about, and we talked a little bit about this towards the end of last hour, the Department of Corrections here in Michigan has announced that they expect to save at least $19 million on health care next year by enrolling inmates and parolees in the state's expanded Medicaid health care program. Now, they say, you know, and that's the thing. When you hear, oh, well, government's saving money. Oh, well, isn't that great? Yeah. But seldom in those types of situations do they give you the full benefit of the numbers. The full benefit of what those numbers mean to people and what it means as we move forward. Because, you know, how much of this money will actually be saved by government, and that money will go back to taxpayers? Well, I'll give you a hint how much money is going to come back to taxpayers. It's small and it rhymes with Nero.
Zero.
There you go. It's that simple, because it's not just a matter of, well, $19 million, and you know what? Yeah, we're going to take care of that. Okay. You know, and it looks good on the state books, the state coffers. You don't have that to deal with, and, you know, and we've got other things to deal with in the state, and we know that. However, you always have to think from the big picture perspective on this, and I understand why people will totally not think this way, because, you know, I mean, they always say all politics is local, and yeah, okay, I get that. But we're a part of America. There are 50 states in America, and of course, if every state is saving this kind of money, well, bravo, except for one tiny little detail. That money is being spent by the federal government. It's not being spent by the state. No, no, no. That'll be spent by the federal government as a part of Obamacare. And as a part of Obamacare, you remember that we were promised this wasn't going to add a dime to the deficit. Not going to add a dime to the deficit. We're going to be able to do this without spending any more money than we normally would. Well, and I'll explain it to you, and I know you already know this, but, you know, for some that don't really think about it, when you have a program like this, and according to the Goldwater Institute, they did a study on this and said expanding Medicaid across the country will add $950 billion to the national debt. Adding money to the national debt is the end result of adding extra money to the deficit every year. Think about that. We were promised, well, it's not going to add a dime. This is not extra spending. Oh, yes, it is. And if it adds $950 billion, think about how much money we've added to the national debt just in the last 6 years. And yes, it exploded under Bush. I heard you. But it's not necessarily a Bush thing. We have seen more spending just in the last 6 years. To be able to say we saved this money, we saved $19 million, well, when across the country we're going to be spending $950 billion over the course of time between 2014 and 2022, and Michigan's decision alone to expand Medicaid increases the national debt by $22.5 billion through 2022. How is it? How is it that that is a good thing to be able to say, well, we're going to shift our problems over here to this faceless federal government? But guess what? This faceless federal government is paid for by
us.
Us. That's right. You and I. So we're basically saying, you know what? I'm not going to I'm not going to take the money out of my left pocket to pay for that. No, 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 no. I'm going to take it out of the right pocket of the jeans that I'll be buying in 6 years. The problem is when you buy those jeans in 6 years, you got to remember to put the money in there. And that's the problem we're having. You know, you talk about how, well, let's shift the money there. And I guess, you know, what I'm saying is, why is that such a good thing to be able to do that? Yeah, it makes the state look like we're saving money. Look at that. Oh, we're taking care of people in this state. Look how fiscally responsible we're being here. Okay, well, I get it. But when you shift it to the federal government, then you've got another problem. And you've got a problem we're already facing with Congress that can't figure out, oh, wait, you know what? If we spend less than what we actually have coming in, we could, well, I don't know, pay down the debt. How does that work again?
Wouldn't that be something for a change?
And, you know, and I think about this from a historical perspective. I love to read up on past presidents. I enjoy it. I enjoy it from a historical perspective. I enjoy it to put it in context of what's going on in today's times. And, you know, I've read up on Abraham Lincoln. I've read up on, you know, some of the best biographies about him. Got one that's standing by on my shelf now about George Washington. One of the most fascinating ones I've read recently was one that was on Andrew Jackson. Now, looking into history, some of the things that Andrew Jackson wanted to do, I did not agree with, did not think they were the right moves for the country. He did them anyway, and as a result, you have what you have. But one of the things that Andrew Jackson talked about, he felt it was extremely important that we do not have debt as a country. And he focused on paying it down, paying it off. And he was able to accomplish that during his time in office. And he touted that as that's something that we need to do. We need to make sure we don't have debt. Imagine what he would think today about a debt in the trillions. And we're adding to it by saying, well, the state doesn't have to pay for this. The federal government will. Oh, that saves us money. No, it doesn't save us money. It causes problems. And that's the issue we're dealing with this. On things like this, you can't just sit there and say, you know what, we'll rob Peter to pay Paul. It doesn't work. That's the problem we get into. And that's the problem we get into when we decide, well, let's expand these programs with money we don't have. Because that's exactly what we've done. You want to be a part of the program? 877-382-4280. 382-4280 is the local phone number. Also, 80373, if you would like to be a part of the program that way. You can text us with your comments. Your appropriate comments we'll share with people. Your inappropriate comments, Michael will just have a grand old time over there by himself with them. So, in the meantime, let's head on over to the phones where George is standing by. Hi, George. Welcome to the program.
You have to remember, if we didn't take that money, some other state would get it. So, you know, get with the act here, man.
So, basically, it'd take for ourselves, because otherwise Nevada would get it.
You know, and it's got to take and be a case that you have to take and, you know, realize that a lot of this money goes for projects we really probably don't need. I'll say right here in the Kalamazoo area, all these tenth of a mile markers between here and the Indiana border, these nice big signs that tell us how many miles it is lit up in the sky to the next city instead of just a sign that's painted along the road. But the Nick Shirepa from MMDOT says, well, we can't use it for anything else. It's a federal grant. So, you know, I think we should take and stop the federal grants.
Well, there's an awful lot more than just that we probably need to stop as well, George. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You know, it's a good point, though. I mean, you can see the view that some people would have is like, well, if we don't do it, Ohio's going to get it. Well, you know, if we don't do that, well, you know, Georgia's going to get their cut. When are we going to start thinking about, you know what? we're Americans here. We're all in this together. And guess what? We've all got a part of these trillions upon trillions of debt. And it's not sustainable. We've even had the Fed chair herself has said that it's not sustainable. It's something we've got to stop doing. Why is it we get to this point where, well, you know what? We can't have them do that. But you know, it's okay. Because here in Michigan, we're saving money. It's like saying, you know what? You know, the boat's filling up with water, but our little area, we're good.
Yeah, we're not sinking.
Let's head back over to the phone lines where Dan is standing by. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of a general comment and then a comment on both of the topics that we've talked about so far. The general comment is, with Obama, he's an ideologue rather than a problem solver. And being an ideologue, he's really not inclined to look for practical and pragmatic solutions. He's looking more toward political solutions. So you take something like Obamacare. It was so expansive that it really was impractical. I mean, to implement it in its totality it just wasn't pragmatic at all. It was such a break from what we had before, and so many things that were unnecessary. And the second thing about the companies moving overseas for the tax purposes. You know, one of the things that he does constantly is he chides and criticizes people who he later wants to cooperate with him, whether it was the Supreme Court or whether it's Congress. In this case, criticizing the business owners for moving over there, when instead in those first 2 years when he had control of both houses of Congress, there could have been tax reform implemented, but sitting down first with those same people he's now criticizing. If you gave me a choice of paying 35% taxes, gosh, I don't know, and paying 20 or 18%, it might be hard for me to remain as patriotic as I truly am right now.
Well, and you understand why companies do that. Somebody brought up the idea, well, it's because of greed. I guess I fail to understand why wanting to make a profit is a bad thing.
It's been sold like that for, or as being that by politicians recently, especially. And you look back at, you know, the number of things that Carnegie did and the Ford Motor family did. And, you know, locally, the Stryker family and the Gilmore family. I'm sure that they made lots of money, but their philanthropy and their hiring of various people, all of those things stimulated the economy. And I guess if you look at human nature, we are greedy. I mean, we're as little kids, we want that toy and we want that food and we want those things. And that's just natural. But I think if the people who have taken on the notion that greed is bad, well, I mean, unbridled greed with total selfish consumption. Well, there might be a place for that, but
sure.
I don't see. But every one of those people hires somebody. Every one of those people builds a building, and you know, it's not, you know, Obama's statement, "You didn't build that," is again an example of his not understanding the whole nature of capitalism and how healthy it is.
Well, and I think, you know, even if there is that level of quote unquote greed, as they call it, why can we not use that and say, all right, you know what? You want more of your money. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to make it possible for you to keep more of your own money. And guess what? In return, we end up with more jobs.
No question.
I mean, that's good for all of us.
100% right.
I don't know. I may be just getting a little too practical for myself, Dan. What do you think?
Well, and that really is the issue. And, you know, practical politics is what we really need, and impractical extremism is what is dividing the country so badly. And when you open the show with saying, you know, this is, and everybody sees that cutting taxes will encourage these companies not to move overseas, but they won't do it. You're 100% right. That is where the problem lies.
Definitely. Dan, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. You know, Dan's making me feel good there, but you know, the bottom line on that, and we were talking, if you're just joining us, we were talking earlier about companies that were relocating their headquarters overseas to avoid taxes here in America. And on the surface, yeah, that sounds horrible. Oh, how unpatriotic. But the bottom line is this. If it's going to be cheaper for them to operate there, you understand why they do it. You know, it's the whole idea of, well, gee, if I live in that part of town, it'll be cheaper for me to be able to drive to work. It'll be cheaper for me to be able to, you know, and just, you know, let's say the rent's cheaper in that part of town or whatever. You know, and you balance that, obviously. You know, you understand companies are not going to go relocate to, say, Congo or something like that. But they're talking about, yeah, it's actually cheaper in Britain. It's actually cheaper in parts of Europe now, which, I mean, we know what's happened there. I think, you know, maybe that's the way to be able to play it. Say, you're right, you know what, lower taxes. Make sure that it works a little bit better for companies. So just a few thoughts there. But the whole idea, and getting back to what we were talking about at this point, you know, the Department of Corrections coming out and saying, well, we're going to save $19 million on health care next year. Well, it's disingenuous because, yeah, they're saving it. But guess what? The federal government is paying for it with money they don't have. And where does the money they don't have coming from? No, not you and me. Our kids. And that's a problem. Now, I've got a 5-year-old who's going to be paying for health care for prisoners in Michigan in about 20 years or so. How is that fair?
It's not fair at all.
How is that fair at all? We need to be taking care of this stuff ourselves. And it's going to take some tough, tough decisions. Practical decisions. Decisions that, quite frankly, this administration is just not willing to make. Michael's getting into this one, you could tell.
Oh, yeah.
590 WKZO, it's the Jeremy Lawrence Show. It is 76 degrees in Kalamazoo, and it's just, it's one of those ugly days.
Yeah, you don't know if it's going to rain or not.
Yeah, so Bob Larson saying that, yeah, we're going to see some rain throughout the day, but you know what, if you're thinking along the lines of, well, I want to get out, I want to do some running again, or I want to get out and do some bicycling or anything outdoors, he's saying basically Tuesday through Friday, you got a free ticket to it. So at least there is that to look forward to. So, well, we've talked about a lot of stuff. And one of the things I promised earlier we were going to get to this, and you know that the Keystone Pipeline has been brought up. It's been brought up in elections. And multiple, because this has been brought up in the last election, the one before that. It's being brought up in this current one as something that President Obama is standing up against. Well, he's kind of hedged on it. You know, he said, well, you know what? We need to make sure that we're not going to impact the environment on this. We're going to make sure that. And then the State Department came out and estimated that it wasn't going to be all that bad. Well, now I'm sure the president is sitting here going, okay, great, finally, I got one to justify this. A new study has come out. And this is a piece that, for what it's worth, was reported on MSNBC.com. The study from the Stockholm Environment Institute. They're a nonprofit research organization that say that the Keystone Pipeline will produce 4 times the amount of greenhouse gas emissions than what the State Department originally said. They're asking President Obama, please do not approve this. Now, here's the other part of this that I find interesting. The study says that the pipeline could reduce oil prices to, get ready for this, $3 a barrel. Now, you know what I'm saying right there? If it gets them down to $3 a barrel, sign us up.
We'll have cheap gas prices.
Think about what the gas prices would be. It'd be lower than when I started driving. I remember the day I got my license, gas prices were 89 cents a gallon. And no, I'm not an old geezer. But the bottom line is, if we can get things down that low, isn't that a good thing? Now they'll say, all right, well, you know, we'll increase this, that, and the other. All right, you know what? I think there's a couple of things here that we need to look at. First of all, oil prices will not get down to $3 a barrel. I don't think anybody except for this group has that view of it, and they have that view of it simply to be able to say, look, it'll be horrible for the environment. I think it won't get down to that, but it will cut the costs of oil. But the other part of it is developing some of these new things at the same time, developing new things to be able to do things a little bit easier and better. If we get to the point of where the vehicles we drive are no longer on oil-based stuff, you know what that's going to mean? Heating oil and things like that, it ain't going to be cheap. Yeah. It's going to be a whole lot cheaper to be able to have that work out. And I think, you know, with a pipeline like this, you're able to use that and refine it right here in the States. It means jobs. And it means an economy that's going to go boom. And who doesn't like that? You know, we've got a it's based on oil. We know that. We know we need to be able to diversify that a little bit. And we understand that. If you listen to T. Boone Pickens, he talks about ways to do that in terms of natural gas and things like that. And I think, you know, there is wisdom in diversifying that, but I think there's also wisdom in building a pipeline that's going to bring oil down to a certain level. Whether it's that $3 a barrel, even if it's $30 a barrel, let's talk about it. And I think, you know, you've got to look at this and say, all right, well, you've got differing opinions on what it's going to do to the environment. Well, you know what? So far, I hadn't heard anything but just until now on this. .437-590-WKZO, and it is the Jeremy Lawrence Show. As we continue to go through your Monday, and just a quick thanks to the fine folks at Lake Michigan Credit Union. They're bringing you this portion of the program. They're the best place for your money. Learn more at lmcu.org. I've been talking about the Keystone Pipeline, and there was a study that came out. The Stockholm Environment Institute came out with a study that says that what the State Department had said about the Keystone Pipeline, that, well, you know what, really wouldn't have any significant impact on greenhouse gas emissions and that kind of thing. Well, this study says, no. It'll create four times the amount of those greenhouse gas emissions. What they said is that that because prices could go down because of this pipeline to $3 a barrel for oil. Yeah. Anyway, they say that it could go down that far. Because of that, more people will use things, and that will, well, basically what that means is that it's cheaper to be able to use this stuff. Does that mean more people will go places? Well, maybe a little. Maybe a little.
I mean, we might use it all the time then as well.
I suppose. I don't know. Now, there's been thoughts both directions on this of, well, you know what? It's just going to mean that more is used, so more is going to be spewed into the atmosphere. Now, mind you, you know, there are climate studies that say, well, it's really not as bad as everything that you're hearing about this as well. You talk to anybody that is for the whole idea of climate change, and they'll say, well, it's settled science. Well, it isn't. There are some scientists who believe differently than that, and we've talked about that. Now, basically what they're saying is that in this particular study, they said that American officials didn't look at the implications of an increased supply of fuel. However, they don't acknowledge in their study whether Keystone would encourage oil sands expansion or simply provide an outlet for growth that would have happened anyway. And let's face it, it's happening now. People are looking for ways to find more oil. Why? Because prices have gone up. Because gas prices for people all over the place are up. Now, you think about the other part of this, too, is that, and this is something that was said in a Canadian report, they're saying that Keystone crude actually causes less pollution than Middle East sour crude. This is according to some of these oil experts. Honestly, that's new information to me, that this actually pollutes less. I'd have to cross-reference that one. But you've got to think that this particular group, now the Stockholm Environment Institute, They're a nonprofit research organization. They were started by the Swedish government. So, in effect, we're letting a group started by the Swedish government tell us how we're going to do policy. That's a good idea. Yeah. They have a vested interest in here, don't they? But I think, you know, you keep looking at this kind of stuff and say, all right, you know what? We need to be able to do this because, well, you know, it's going to cause this and this and that. And, you know, I'm all for, don't get me wrong, I am all for new technologies and new ideas. You know, they talk about, well, you know, you're against solar. No. I'm fine. I'm for that. But look outside. There's half the day the sun doesn't shine. The other half of the day, what happens when there's clouds? Lots of them. When there's rain, yeah, you're not going to get as much solar power that way. It's only a partial solution. Just like wind power. That's great. Stick up these huge windmills. Have these things turning around and generating power. Terrific. But guess what? The wind doesn't always blow. It's a partial solution. That's why we need to continue to look for other solutions. Now, I heard a report recently that said that they've looked at some different lithium battery issues that are able to make these batteries go a little bit further. Not only for cell phones and that kind of thing, but for electric cars. That's good. That's a good thing. But again, it's a partial solution. And if you talk about, you know, electric-powered vehicles, where did they get the electricity from? Well, they got it from natural gas, oil products, coal. Some of these things pollute. See, so that it's not, I think that's the thing you need to look at is to say, all right, you know what? We need to look into certain things that are going to fuel our cars a little bit better. T. Boone Pickens talked about switching everything over to natural gas, and that could end up taking care of some problems. I think it's an interesting idea, but I think it's also interesting to start looking at some other technologies. They've talked about hydrogen-powered vehicles, and the byproduct would be water. Yeah, they'd let water out. Ooh, that would be bad. How awful would that be? But you know, these are things we need to look at and we need to study and we need to dig into and see if there are ways to do that. But guess what? Those technologies are not with us now. So we also need to come up with ways to harness what we have. And that is by oil exploration. That's by putting in pipelines like this and finding ways to harness that so that we can use them. You know what? I guess, call me nuts, but Canada has been a pretty good neighbor to us over the years. You know, they've given us some good inventions, some good things they've imported. Some people like hockey. There's some Red Wings fans that are going, yeah, right there. I get that. Yeah. So that's a Canadian invention, hockey is. Labatt's Blue. There you go. Another good choice. You know? All right. Canadians have given us a few things. They've been pretty good neighbors. They keep the dog off our lawn. Okay, you know, it's a pretty good relationship. I'd rather do business with them than do business with some of these other countries that have oil that we're already doing business with. And it's not so much the Middle East. Because we do get our oil. Yeah, we get it from Canada partially, but guess what? Venezuela. Yeah, we've had a great relationship with them lately, haven't we? Why not have more of a relationship with Canada? Why not have a closer tie with our neighbor to the north? This is not a bad thing. And to have this pipeline that brings that oil supply down here, we refine it, we use it, that's a good thing. That is a very good thing. And if it brings oil prices down, then guess what? We're going to have cheaper gas prices. We're going to be able to do more things. The economy is going to work a little bit better, but food prices will go down. Who's on board with that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, raise your hand on that one. Because, you know, even how many reports have we heard? The price of beef is going up. Well, the price of chicken's going up. The price of pork is going up. Basically, the only thing that's not going up is vegetables, and that's because we haven't got there yet. So if you're a vegetarian, you're making out for a little while longer until they figure out a way to make the price of that go up. And why does the price go up on all of these things?
Because it costs money to transport that stuff.
You're transporting it to market, which means you're either going to throw it on a train or you're going to put it in a semi and carry it wherever it is it's going to be sold. Why not? If we can make gas cheaper, then guess what? It's going to be cheaper for these things. Then we're going to see a lowering of the cost of things. We're going to see an economy that booms. We're going to see, and think about this, we're talking about a pipeline that the State Department has said will not have an economic impact. Now, will that cause a little bit more commerce to go up? Sure. But you know what that provides for us to be able to do? Provides for us to be able to develop certain things that are out there on the horizon. Because I think, all right, it's smart to do this now, but it's also smart to look at future technologies. How many of us have seen those that video online where they're talking about solar panels that they can make roads out of? All right, sign me up for that too. You know what? If it's a cheap source of power, and when the sun shines, if you've got that on all the roads, that's an abundant supply of power. Not a complete solution, but it does take care of some of the problem. And I think that's a good thing as well. And that kind of investment can be had if we've got a booming economy. Right now, we're just trying to get ourselves through the day, and how many people are actually working right now? I think this is where we've got to look at this and say, all right, we need to do both and. And it's not just this whole thing of, I mean, you listen to the president, he talks about solar and wind energy. Great. Develop it by all means. But you know what? We also got to drill. We also got to look at different technologies. We also got to look at different things that will make it better and easier for us. All in all, if we do all of it, then we end up with a winner. Everybody's a winner on this one. And you pull out one study and say, well, because of this, it's, you know, but it's not necessarily expanded beyond what it's doing. It's already doing things. They're finding other ways to get it to market. It is called these tanker trains. And we've already had, you remember out in the Dakotas, they had that problem with that train that was tar sands. Throw it in a pipeline where it's not going across with the train, you have less likely to have a problem. It's less likely for that to cause issues. It's less likely to be a problem for the environment. And if this is a brand new pipeline, it's going to mean jobs building it and jobs maintaining it. And guess what? They're going to maintain it because how many of these oil companies want to spill their product everywhere?
None of them want to do that.
You know, they do it because it's an accident. They do it because it's an extreme problem. And we saw that in the Gulf how many years ago with that Gulf oil spill. Yeah, that was an extreme problem. That was stupidity that caused it, certainly. But are you going to tell me for a second that the company behind it was going, yeah, we want to spill our product out there? No, they want to sell the product to make money. It boggles the mind for me to think, why is it you've got this issue? You think that companies are out to spoil the environment. If they spill oil, that's bad on them and bad on the environment. That's not good for anybody. This, it's just simplicity, I know. But I think it's a little easier to think that, you know what, it works that way than to think, oh, everybody's out to just kill the whole planet. Come on. Seventy-six degrees in Kalamazoo, 590 WKZO. It's the Jeremy Lawrence Show in the final closing moments together. Just a reminder to you that we will make every attempt to play for you the Tigers game tonight. No, not because we don't know how. We know how to do that very well. Thank you. But the Tigers, they're in Pittsburgh. We're hearing reports of rain quite possibly happening as the game starts. So we're going to keep an eye on that, let you know what's going on with that. And if there is some sort of an issue and there needs to be a rescheduled event, we are hearing from the Tigers radio network, it could very well happen as soon as tomorrow that they would reschedule the game if it got postponed, because it's a brief two-game series in Pittsburgh. Yes, I know they come home and play Pittsburgh immediately. I don't know how they lined that one up. Hey, let's travel.
Let's play a home and home.
We'll take the plane together. I don't know. That might be fun. But anyway, it just in terms so that you get what's going on here, there could be some rain tonight. We're going to keep an eye on that and let you know what's going on with that as things move along. And if the game gets postponed, likely tomorrow it will be a day-night doubleheader in Pittsburgh is what they're telling us. So we'll see how it works. They're still going to try and get this one in tonight, if at all possible. So that's what's going on with that. Also coming up here in just a few minutes, we will keep you in the know on news and events and happenings. Kalamazoo's Afternoon News will give you a complete rundown. We got you covered. Don't worry about it. We got you taken care of. So we'll cover what's going on in the news and get you up to date. You might have missed some stuff throughout the day. All right. One thing I wanted to dig into a little bit on this. Hillary Clinton came out and did an interview on foreign policy. She did this with The Atlantic. And she distanced herself from President Obama, rejecting the core of his self-described foreign policy doctrine, describing his decision against backing Syrian rebels early on as a failure. Now, it's interesting that the woman who was Secretary of State for 4 years under President Obama carried out his foreign policy is now coming out and calling his foreign policy a failure. Now, the entire policy has been slammed as too slow to respond, too passive instead of proactive, etc., etc., etc. It's something that that Hillary promotes in her new book that no one's reading, Hard Choices. Now, the interesting thing about this is they're saying, well, you know what? The Clintons said that they know how to read poll data, and they see that Barack Obama's not very popular. So if she's thinking about running for president, then it makes sense that she would distance herself from the president so as to look good. Well, I get that. And the Clintons, the Clintons' advisors are saying, well, they don't have any polling operations. That's ridiculous. They're not doing that. But that wasn't the point. It's not that they don't have polling data out there in the field, which it's the Clintons. They always have polling data in the field. Even if they're not running for anything, they like to know what people are thinking about it, just in case. Nevertheless, the Clintons were fantastic at sticking the finger in the mouth. Let's see. Yep, okay. Stick it up in the air. Which way is the wind blowing? Let's go that way. That describes most of the Clinton presidency, quite frankly. And Hillary Clinton is no dummy. She's keeping up with what the polls are saying. And the polls are saying that Barack Obama is not terribly popular. And her area of expertise is foreign policy. Why? She was the Secretary of State for 4 years. Now, did she do a good job? That's debatable. Benghazi happened on her watch. That's another entire discussion you could have. But she's coming out and saying, all right, well, you know what? Obama's foreign policy, not a good idea. But that's got to backfire a little bit because somebody's got to say, Secretary Clinton, weren't you in charge of that for most of the time that he was in office so far? Yeah. How do you get around that? And I know there's some that would say, well, she was in charge. It was his vision. And she just carried it out. But do you think for a minute that she didn't have some sort of input on what was going on overseas?
I mean, if she had a problem with the foreign policy, why didn't she speak up and say something?
And if you think about this, she was put in charge of that. You know, Hillary, I need you. I need your help. I need your experience and that kind of thing. Because Barack Obama didn't have any clue what was going on. So, you know, and you see some of what he's come up with, and you see the way the world has treated him. They've gone from, well, we'll give him the Nobel Prize just for breathing, to now they just kind of laugh at him because, I mean, what are the Russians doing? What's going on in the Middle East? And they've made announcements like, we're going to plant the flag of Allah at the White House. Yeah, that's those new people in the Middle East that are taking over in Syria and Iraq. Yeah, They've made that kind of an announcement. They don't do that if they're afraid of America. But Hillary coming out and saying, well, that doesn't work. She at least had a hand in this, you would think. And I know she's sitting around saying things, and we remember back when Benghazi took place and there was, you know, the hearing on it. What difference at this point does it make? Well, it makes a difference because she was in charge. And to come out and do this, I think this backfires. I think this totally backfires on her. Because, yeah, you could come out and distance yourself from Obama. It's something that I thought she was going to do years ago. I figured she probably would have been smart to somewhere midway through the first term say, all right, I've had enough of this. I can't stand for this anymore. I can't stand it. Then it would have been believable. But she finished the first term and finished it out to the point of like, okay, this is where most people get off the ride, and I'm one of them. See you later. Bye. You know, I think it would have been more believable for her to step out in the first term sometime and say, this isn't working. This isn't what he's doing isn't working. Then you can take a legitimate step out and say, I don't agree with this foreign policy. But you carried it out for the first 4 years of his presidency. By the end of his presidency, that's half of his foreign policy has come from the hands of Hillary Clinton. To come out now and say you were against it. Yeah, there's just something there that doesn't quite, you know. So, and I think this is one of those things where she's getting out. She's trying to promote a book. She's trying to sell a book. She's also trying to sell herself as a good alternative as president.
Because who knows? She may run.
She might. 50-50 chance, I think. And if she does, she wants it to look like she wasn't part of that administration. But guess what, Mrs. Clinton? You were part of that administration. You were part of that foreign policy that you said was a failure. Uh-huh. It's going to do it for the program today. Have a good one. You know what? We'll talk to you when we get together next. Hopefully it's tomorrow.
This is Kalamazoo's news station and Kalamazoo's home for Detroit Tiger baseball. 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.